When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 180 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, the UK's only dedicated sports podcast network. And also Fanatics. Joining myself and Pete on this Sunday morning is obviously one of the old stalwarts of the show. It's Phil Haywood. Phil, how are you on this glorious Sunday morning post Stoke?
Yeah, good morning, Mike. Morning, Pete. No, it's great to be back on. I've been on for a while, lads. Things have got in the way, and it's just good to be back on. Especially after the first couple of pre-season games, it's nice to jump on before the season starts.
That's it. You know, things obviously now starting to ramp up. We'll be back in our weekly slot now after a sort of sporadic recording over the course of the summer. And we certainly are now at the business end of pre-season with Everton, with just the one game to go next weekend against Sporting Lisbon. And it's been obviously the first pre-season under Sean Dyche. We got a 1-0 winner, last gas winner, at the Bet365 stadium yesterday. Obviously, Amadou Onana just bundling the ball over the line. But you know, let's have a bit of a chat around pre-season, really. What's been your thoughts, Pete, on how things have played out? Obviously, where we are at the moment, we've had a quick chat over the course of the summer in terms of players coming in. Obviously, Ashley Young and Dan Juma are both through the door. Dan Juma got his first minutes against Stoke yesterday. What's been your take so far on pre-season with one game to go? I don't want to go down a sort of overly negative route. But have you got any concerns in terms of where we currently are?
Well, I'll try my best to start off from a balanced place. And I think, you know, one positive is there's been an abundance of clean sheets, and I think we're looking organised, and it looks like we're starting to build a team identity again, and it's an opportunity for Dyche and the staff to communicate to the players what it means to play in his system. So I think from the point of view of, you know, consistency and actually having a pre-season, that seems to be in place. And we do seem to have a core group of the first team that have been available for these games. Obviously, the elephant in the room that is probably going to dominate this podcast is goals and a striker. And, you know, we've always said in terms of this window, you know, when other players have been coming through, you know, particularly, you know, Ashley Young, you know, the Dan Juma alone, these could be really, really smart signings if we sign a striker. Or again, it could be evidence that the club just don't seem to be able to learn the lesson or solve this problem for whatever reason. And I think all of us, the longer the pre-season window goes on and that, you know, the answer to that dilemma isn't revealed, you can't help but breed a bit of negativity or, get a bit nervous, because you ideally want your squad all together before the first game of the season. And looking at the lineup for the game yesterday, which we'll talk about in a minute, where, you know, Dan Juma kind of starts in that central position. I think I said to you guys and a couple of other Blues, you know, I wouldn't be too surprised if this is more or less the team going into Fulham, and this is what we see from a striker point of view, potentially Dan Juma being in that position or being asked to kind of fulfil that role, which could potentially be quite a difficult, frustrating start for him and for Evertonians. And I hope that isn't the way it goes. But I think that's my concern at the moment. And I think the sad thing about it is it kind of overshadows some of the more positive elements of pre-season, like, you know, actually, you know, being competitive, being organised, stringing clean sheets, you know, looking like a team again. So we just need to get it sorted, don't we?
Yeah, of course. There's still plenty of work to do in the transfer market, that's for sure. But I mean, what I would sort of caveat any kind of maybe negative slants on things with from all of us really is that during pre-season, obviously the players are training at a different intensity. They're being obviously put through a lot of work at the training ground. Sometimes the training the morning of a pre-season game, and then obviously going and playing in a pre-season game. So when it comes to the preparation for matches, when it comes to being worked hard to build up that pre-season and that early season fitness, it's different to what happens over the course of the season. So we've got to remember that the players have got a lot of miles and a lot of minutes in their legs over the course of the last few weeks or so with obviously pre-season games. We all know obviously the famous gaffer day that Sean Dyche does and things like that. And I think both Ian Woan and Steve Stone have both alluded to the emphasis on the players being the fittest team in the Premier League. So I think we have to remember that when it comes to pre-season performances, that does have, you know, does take its toll on what we actually see. However, I was at obviously at Stoke yesterday. You were at Bolton in the week as well, Phil. And I think it's still evidence on what Pete was saying there. Obviously, a lack of goals is always the concern, isn't it? And it has been with Everton, you know, bar that sort of anomaly against Brighton last season, near the back end of the season. We do struggle and we have struggled to score goals consistently over the last probably couple of seasons, really. And when you've got Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who was pictured, obviously, in full training the day before the game. So hopes are raised that he might play some kind of part against Stoke and he wasn't in the squad. When you've obviously had him injured, and up to now, yet we brought in Dan Juma, we haven't brought in a central striker in the mould of Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Those concerns will remain, because whether or not Everton are firing all cylinders because of pre-season training, yesterday and at Bolton, those two games certainly spring to mind. We scored one goal against Wigan and we scored two goals against a second division outfit, if you like, in our first pre-season game over in Switzerland. We haven't been creating a great deal, have we, really, which is the major concern. And you can understand why it does concern Evertonians at the moment.
Yeah, I totally agree with what Pete said there. I said what he said about obviously Dan Juma playing up front, and it could potentially be the Fulham lineup. I think, is he going with that in case we don't get someone in on before Fulham? And everyone knows the job. It's a close-knit group. I think we've always had, apart from obviously the silly seasons under Koeman and things like that, Marco Silva, we've always had it as a close-knitted squad. That's why Moyes always did so well. But I think the difference with that era now, we've always had a goal scorer. We always had people who could score goals from midfield. Obviously, we've got neither. We might get the odd midfielder who chips in with three or four, obviously, like last season. But we haven't got that focal point at all. And I think everyone's very positive. When I was speaking to at Bolton, that Dyche will set us up well. He'll have us organised. He'll go game by game. He won't look too far ahead. And he will literally take points each game. And I think he did tighten that up definitely last season. The away games, we nicked a few points away from home. And like you said, Mike, about the Brighton game. But when we do break the lines, there's just nothing there. Or I think the fans, they know that nothing's going to come from it. And it's just a hope that we're going to nick something. And I think that's the famous saying, we cheer for a corner. We cheer for, you know, because we don't get many, or we don't make the most of them anyway. I do worry certainly with the striking options, and we are predictable. I think I said it last year, and I think other teams, it's highlighted for the teams, Everton have to score the first goal. And if teams start fast against us and score, Everton won't score two. So Everton have to score the first goal. And I think that puts a lot of pressure on players. But also, I think the players know exactly their roles and they do the basics well.
I think you're right, and you said before we started to record today that about obviously with Sean Dyche, and we've learned obviously now what he's all about. He will have to obviously well drilled, and if we can stay in games, like you say, we keep it at 0-0 and get the first goal, then it gives us a really good chance. And you know, to be fair to him, you know, I think that it's important that we're not sitting here judging pre-season and judging him, because let's get it right. Results don't mean anything at all. We've over the years, how many good pre-seasons have we had and then gone into the season and been absolutely terrible and not picked up points? How many bad pre-seasons have we had and then started the season well? So it doesn't really sort of have a great bearing. But I think, you know, after what we've had, what we've been served up over the last two seasons, the hope was that we, you know, we got a striker in fairly early. We had sort of four signings in at least before the start of the season, with maybe a couple more coming in at the back end of the transfer window. As things stand at the moment, we haven't got that. Obviously, a couple of weeks ago before the Fulham game, but you want to bed players in. You know, you want to have players there for as long as possible over the course of pre-season to develop relationships with players that are going to be playing alongside and understand them, what the manager expects of them. And as we stand at the moment, for me personally, I'd like to see obviously a striker through the door, and also a centre half through the door before the Fulham game. They're for me, they're two key positions, you know. And we welcomed back Jared Branthwaite yesterday. Great for him to get 45 minutes. I think bar one little wobble, he looked strong, left footer, so it provides balance at the back as well. We know Michael Keane's shortcomings. We know he's very much a confidence player. My concerns around the centre-half position are if James Tarkowski gets injured and you've got Branthwaite and Keane, that concerns me, because Michael Keane struggles at the best of times but needs someone who talks and is a leader alongside him. If you take that away and have Branthwaite with the best will in the world, he could become a top centre-half, but he's still very, very young. That's a huge concern. So we've got to get another centre-half in, for me, as a matter of urgency. Not quite as urgency as the centre-forward position, but it's up there. It really, really is. So, you know, it's one of those where we are seeing, and we did see yesterday, bar probably Onana, who, when he came on, I thought was probably a standout. I know he got his goal, but I just thought he brought a calmness to proceedings. He controlled the midfield. That rubbed off on the likes of Decore and Garner Gay. And it gives us that little bit of a presence in the middle of the pitch. I think he will come in. So that start 11 yesterday, take out James Garner, put in Amadou Onana, and that'll be what we have against Fulham as things currently stand, which is a little bit frightening. But obviously the fact that the majority of those players have worked with Sean Dyche now for quite a long period, you know what to expect. I've also got that little bit of confidence that we will be in. Look that little bit better than we did at the back end of last season. But what's your take, Pete, on the situation in regards to transfers? We want to spend the second half of obviously the show talking about that striking position and what's gone on and who we could be looking at to bring in. What's your take overall in terms of the transfer side of things? Because like I said, we are going to be missing a couple as things currently stand before that Fulham game. Are you concerned the fact that, and we've discussed this on the last show as well, are you concerned that Everton are going to leave it late again in the window in terms of, you know, getting to that last sort of week of the transfer window and trying to bring in two, three or four players and potentially then sort of throwing away some early points and early momentum in the Premier League season?
Yeah, it's a massive concern. It's a massive concern. And I think in the podcast after we signed Ashley Young, I said, you know, it's a stroke of genius. And I said earlier on this podcast, if we manage to sign a striker, and the danger is we go into, you know, the so-called transfer deadline day, and it starts to kind of dawn on all Evertonians that we're not going to bring anybody in. And I think that's kind of been what's happened the previous two windows, really. We've tried to have realistic hopes. I don't think anybody's, you know, got pie in the sky ideas that we're going to sign an established kind of 15 to 20 goal striker. I think we're looking for someone that's fit, hungry and competitive. But I think to get to the point where you realise that the club just aren't going to bring anybody in, for whatever reason, it is undefendable. And I think when you go over previous windows, look, we don't know the full extent of the picture, but I think the consensus is huge mistakes have been made in those cases. So it gets less and less acceptable every window. You know, yeah, we're in a really difficult financial position, but you know, look at Wolves. They've just had to sell Jimenez. They're selling players due to their restrictions. Are they going to end up going into the season without, you know, any established or fit centre forward? I don't think they are. So I don't understand why this keeps happening to Everton. You know, we know the problems that we have. I just don't understand it. So the longer this goes on, the more nervous everybody gets. And you're not telling me for a minute, you're not telling me for one moment, this isn't in the minds of the players. That the players know how reliant we are on Calvert-Lewin and that we are a different team when he's fit and he's able to start. We're just able to play a completely different game. And it's like Phil was spot on earlier when he said, look, when we break the lines and we don't have a centre forward, someone that can link the play, hold it, just be physical, you know, run, make something happen, make it stick, flick it on. When we don't have that, it's just terrible to watch, you know, because you're in games of football, we come further and further back, and you think, how are we going to get out? You know, what are we going to get from this game? And then, like Phil said, it becomes reliant on, you know, a corner or a set piece or a bit of luck. And I think when you're in a relegation scrap and you've got that fight, you can make things happen or you can get a bit of momentum, but it's just a terrible, terrible way to start a Premier League season, isn't it? When you need that momentum, you need that established base, like you were saying, Mike. So I'm really, really concerned, and I think it's difficult not to be overly negative and not, you know, kind of get completely hopeless about it. I think that's the position that we all try to avoid, but we've got the legacy of the past kind of two or three windows behind us, and, you know, sadly, this seems to be a feature of the present Everton regime, doesn't it? So I hope the club managed to work out something different. But it doesn't help when stories seem to be leaked out along the lines of the recruitment team put forward two centre forward options, and it was, let's say, the team, the club leadership, not the scouting team, that decided to opt with Mope based on his Premier League experience. I mean, that it just gives you no confidence at all in the process. So I just hope the club have learned the lesson. And I lose count of how many times I've said that statement, and, you know, other people have said that statement on this podcast, or, you know, on kind of other Everton fan media. I think we're just thoroughly sick and fed up of the journey that we've been on, and we're waiting for something different to happen. We're waiting for the story to change, and I just really hope that the club managed to do something.
I think you know, history certainly is what plays into the minds of all Evertonians, really, when it comes to transfers, and recent history in particular. And as you say, people, any of those stories about last season and Mope coming in over certain other players, and you just think, you know, that the scouts and Kevin Thelwell appear to be doing their job, and they're presenting players of a particular, obviously particular playing style that should fit into the manager's way of playing, and they're being knocked back, it appears, by people above them, which is not really, well, it's not how the director of football system should work. You know, it shouldn't be working that way. And if they're coming with players, what should be happening is, financially, it should be getting sold yes or no, that, you know, we can do that deal or we can't do that deal. It shouldn't be, well, we're not getting him, we're going to get somebody else, here's another player. So, you know, we could spend all day discussing, obviously, that side of things. But again, what I would say is, other sides are in similar positions in terms of frustration. You know, I've heard from various other sets of fans and from other clubs who do, obviously, fan media stuff, and West Ham fans aren't particularly happy. They just sold Declan Rice for £105 million. And up to now, they brought in, I think, a young lad from Cliftonville, in Ireland. That's all that they brought in. Crystal Palace have lost, obviously, Wilfried Zaha. You've got Elise, who's been linked with a move away, but was also injured. And they've so far just brought in Jefferson Lerma on a free. You mentioned Wolves. Wolves have sold a lot of players for quite a lot of money. And they brought in, I think, three players, one of those being from Northampton, one being Matt Doherty coming back on a free. And then he spent £9.5 million on Boubacar Traoré from Metz. So I think a lot of sides are in similar positions. And I think the whole situation surrounding Everton being referred to this independent panel regarding potential financial breaches, I think a lot of sides all of a sudden are starting to think, hang on, we've got to be careful here now. And that is playing into the minds of clubs, not so much your clubs at the upper end of the table, I might add, but other sides are being a little bit more careful. But I think, you know, overall, we'll take a break in a second, and we're going to discuss the striker situation in a bit more detail. But overall, in terms of my opinion on pre-season, is that from a positive aspect, it's been, you know, clean sheets pretty much across the board by one game, isn't it? We seem to have a sort of central core of players, like you said, and we seem to have probably now a settled 11, which was what we saw yesterday, but with Onana coming in for James Garner. I'd like to think, I mean, I'll ask you this one, Phil. In terms of the centre-half position, obviously we saw Michael Keane start with Tarkowski. I think he'll start against Fulham regardless. Would you like to see Sean Dyche just go and say, right, and Blood and Jared Branthwaite, who had a decent season at PSV, won some silverware, got decent reviews. Would you like to see the manager just go, do you know what? After watching Michael Keane last season, dropped him in the end, didn't he? I mean, I saw him up close and personal yesterday, and though I call him players out, but I think he massively struggled. I really do. I think just decision making, and he certainly wasn't at the top of his game yesterday. Would you like to see the manager just go, do you know what? Balance purposes, this kid, obviously, he's a big lad now. He's filled out even more. Just throw him in against Fulham.
Totally, Mike. Again, I agree with you, Mike. I think you will go with Michael Keane. But on your question, it reminds me a bit like Jagielka and Stones, and the fact that Tarkowski, the leader, like Jagielka was, nurturing Stones. But then, obviously, we have Baines on one side, a lot of experience international, but we've got Ashley Young on one side as well. So either side, you've got an Ashley Young and a Tarkowski, and Pickford behind you. They're three real stalwarts that I'm going again, possibly in front of you. A lot of protection there, a lot of voices talking to him. And like you said, kick it, head it, there's a balance. It wouldn't surprise me, mate, if he did put him in as well as start, maybe Michael Keane. Will he do it? No. Would I like to see it? Yes. Just because I think Everton need to now look at something different, like you said, mate. If Tarkowski does get injured, or there's, you know, an Ashley Young injury or whatever, we haven't got that vocal presence, and we're quite weak in that respect. And I think you only get better by playing games, and you know, there's only so much you can watch from the sideline, these players. So playing in a Premier League game, and again, I think we've got a nice start as well. It would be a nice time to maybe throw them in and learn and get that experience, but yeah.
What do you think, Pete, on the Branthwaite situation before we have a short break? Because I saw him yesterday, got 45 minutes, thought he acquitted himself pretty well. Obviously, like I said, pre-season is always difficult to judge, but by all accounts, you know, he got a lot of games time over in Holland. I think that, you know, it was good use of the loan market. I think Everton are improving in that side of things now with the younger players we've just seen again. Obviously, Lewis Warrington's joined Plymouth, and Stan Mills got a goal yesterday on his Oxford debut as well. So we're starting to see now Everton's younger players be loaned correctly. And it certainly worked for Branthwaite last season, didn't it? Would you want to see him start against Fulham? Do you think that, like Phil said there, you know, take a bit of a risk, take a bit of a gamble? Do you want to see the manager just sort of roll the dice a little bit? And throw Branthwaite in, take Keane out of the situation. And like Phil said, really valid point there. He's got leaders all around him, hasn't he? Ashley Young, James Tarkowski, Jordan Pickford, Garner Gay. It could work, couldn't it?
Definitely, yeah. I'd definitely be team Branthwaite. And I think, like you say, he's earned the right to start. You know, is it that much of a gamble? He's had a full, not just a full season under his belt, playing for PSV, but by all accounts, they wanted to keep him. A really successful season, playing football in a successful winning team. I know it's a different league. I know it's a different level. But it sounds like exactly what he needed for his, for his development. And before we went on loan, I've been broadly really impressed with him, really, really impressed with the football he's already played for Everton. So I think he very much deserves the potential of starting. And I think it would be good for the squad again to have another player in there who's, you know, who's hungry, who wants to develop, who wants to win, who wants to learn. And I completely agree with what Phil was saying about, you know, who we potentially have either side of him. And Tarkowski, obviously Pickford behind him, Young. He's in a really good position to learn and to be supported. But I also agree with Phil. I just can't see Sean Dyche doing it. I think he'll stick with not what he knows, but he's made it very clear that he favours Michael Keane and he really rates him highly. I just hope that Michael Keane gets off on the right foot, because I like Michael Keane as well, but I think a lot of Evertonians would agree with me that he's frequently got a mistake in him, and he's very much a confidence player, and I think it can be a bit of a vicious cycle for Michael Keane that once he makes a mistake, his game's gone then. And I think if he gets through games without that happening, he can be exceptional, he can be excellent. But it's often one or the other with him. And I think you're never too sure what Michael Keane you're going to get. But when you know you get the Michael Keane with the mistake, I think it can kind of filter around the stadium. So it's not good for that to be our starting point or our number one choice. I don't think.
Just on there as well, lads, as well, I'd be worried if we did struggle and then we threw Branthwaite in. It could be a good platform to start him. Obviously, he was in Europe as well last year with PSV. And obviously, he's been obviously the England under-21s, albeit he didn't play a lot of matches. So he has been around a lot of, you know, decent football last season, as Pete said, alluded to with PSV. Obviously, he was in the Europa League or in Europe, and then obviously with the under-21. I just think if we did start bad, is that a good thing to just throw him in 5 games time or 6? Is it a good benchmark to, you know, like you said, the people around him? He seems quite confident. He seems a lot more confident than a Godfrey or a Holger. You know, I just think that's maybe our next step as a club as well, to maybe put him in there.
I think he does show that little bit of confidence, you know, and I think that a lot of that would have been gained from going away and as a young lad taking that step and playing in a different country, which a lot of young players don't do. You know, it's very much a case of we use the English club loan system and players just don't take that step. English players just don't really take that step and go abroad, whether it be on loan or permanent transfers. You know, how many English players are playing the football abroad on a permanent basis? It's not a great deal. You know, it's amazing, really. So for him, most definitely, I agree. He's got confidence. I think he's a good footballer. I think he's neat and tidy. Obviously, last time you really saw him was when he got sent off against Brentford, wasn't it? At the back end of obviously the 2021-22 season, you know, which was a rough time for us all, of course. But you know, he got done by Ivan Toney, didn't he? And got himself sent off. And you know, we would have learned from that. You know, he's taken a good 12 months away and played a lot of football. Like you say, he's been around success. They won the Dutch Cup, didn't he? Off the top of my head, he's just won the under-21 European Championships. So you know, success breeds success, and having players who are winning things can only help us. I think even though they are young players, I think he will have really matured and will be feeling massively confidence in his game. So I'd love, you know, I'd love against Sporting, you know, to give him the nod. You know, that'll probably give us a sign of intent from the mind. Yeah, I think the side that starts next Saturday at Goodison Park against Sporting Lisbon will be the side that we will see start against Fulham. unless something really drastic happens in the last sort of few days of the transfer market. So let's see what happens next weekend. Let's see if he gets the nod. And that'll tell us what the manager's really thinking before that Fulham game. But like I said, obviously all the talk is around the lack of action in terms of bringing in a striker to the club. There's been a lot of talk. There was a huge link over the last sort of 7 days or so, which Everton appeared close to be getting over the line. It didn't happen. So we're going to take a short break and discuss our striking options and the frustration we're finding within the transfer market. Welcome back to the second part of today's Unholy Trinity podcast. And it's all eyes on the striking department. When the season ended last season, obviously, first thoughts were transfer market. We've got to bring in a goal scorer. You know, one reason is obviously Dominic Calvert-Lewin has suffered a lot with injuries. He's not played any minutes as we speak today in pre-season. He is back in training. He was photographed and videoed Finch Farm involved in full trade Thursday and Friday. But yet he's not yet taken that step onto the pitch. We hope to see him at Goodison Park next weekend. But also we needed another striker in regardless, because we're so low on numbers up there. Obviously, Ellis Sims now gone on a permanent deal to Coventry. Neil Mopay certainly isn't the answer. So we've got to get somebody else in. And we saw at Stoke yesterday, Dan Juma was obviously given the nod to start up top. And what I found watching Dan Juma is he wanted to come away from the central spot. He wanted to go left and get involved in the play. He was almost at times going anywhere other than centrally. And this is not a pop at him. It's just not his natural game. So I think, you know, if he's looking to get involved with play, and he was probably getting a bit frustrated because the first half, nothing was being created at all. And it's difficult. And at times when he was making runs into the box, the balls that were coming in from wide areas weren't great, so they just weren't coming in. So I understood his frustration there. But we do need somebody who is naturally suited to and naturally understands what it is to play as a central striker. We saw last week, Everton were heavily linked to Elbel Altore from Almeria. There was a lot of talk around that. Everton had been accepted by all accounts. The player chose to go to Atalanta, cutting a very long story short. I don't even think it's been announced yet, but he's definitely over there doing his medicals. So that was a long-term target for Everton. Could have had him last summer for €8 million. That's what Pete was alluding to earlier on in the show in terms of other people making decisions and going over the recruitment team and Kevin Thelwell's head and bringing in Neil Mopay for the likes of Elbel Altore for €8 million. Could have had the season to settle into the Premier League. Would have been a great deal for all concerned. Didn't happen. We went back in this summer for a much more inflated price. And obviously, you know, we spent a lot of time trying to get that deal done. Everton with confidence. Everton, I think, offered them more money than Atalanta. But you can't blame the kid for not coming, to be honest. You know, Atalanta have got a great pedigree of developing young talent and then moving on to even bigger things. So he stayed clear of the circus of Everton Football Club, and who can blame him? We haven't got a choice, but he has. So I think, I mean, the manager did say yesterday that, you know, we've missed out on targets. He was one of those targets, I think, that he was alluding to. And it would have been a difficult window. It's a tough market. This is a direct quote. It's a tough market. There's only so much that we can do. So we're working very hard. I can show everyone that to construct deals that can work. I think that with Elbel Altore, there was a small down payment, which a lot of maybe smaller European clubs are quite happy to take. So the overall deal can be fairly hefty, but the initial outlay is small. It worked with Amadou Onana last summer, same kind of situation with Lille. So it leaves us in a predicament, really, doesn't it, Phil? Because like we said already, we are short. We are lacking a cutting edge up top. And losing out on a long-term target is always frustrating. Obviously for the club, of course, but as fans, when you're willing a deal to get over the line, you're willing for a player to come in who is a striker, this is why people start to get a bit nervous and start to get frustrated, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's more a kick in the teeth, Mike, because obviously we've been crying out for a striker since, you know, getting bored of even thinking about it now. But I think that's why it becomes more frustrating, because that's exactly what we need. And as Pete was alluding to earlier in the podcast, that we are structured and we are balanced, and, you know, we have a close-knit group. that's the that the final piece of the jigsaw is what we need. And when you hear it all over social media, and then you come out and hear it more from the club, that obviously we missed out on the targets and we were very close, we could have had them last year. It's massively frustrating, because that's exactly the piece we need to complete our jigsaw for us to move on as a club and try and get us away from the doldrums of the bottom four, the bottom five. And, you know, it just takes one signing like that. Like we saw, we weren't a great side, you know, in 98, and then we signed Kevin Campbell, and one signing, one striker, gets a few goals, it just rockets you, you know, for the next couple of seasons. So it is frustrating, and I'm sure Sean Dyche will have other targets close to his chest. But like you said, Mike, when it's your main target, which you've been after the last couple of, well, certainly 12 months, it is a kick in the teeth.
And every side goes through it. Obviously, in this day and age, it's just that everything's out in the open, isn't it? And I think that we were all excited. Obviously, Dan Junior came in. There was talk of this sort of second signing that the club were confident on getting through the door. And obviously, you sort of build yourself up to be knocked down. And at the time, you know, I think I said on Twitter, you know, prepare to have your heart broken, because you know that it's just not going to happen. It was always, I think, with him in particular, that was always a feeling that I got, or even from, you know, maybe some journalists outside of this country that you don't really trust. A lot of the talk was he prefers to go to Atalanta from fairly early on. So I never got sort of really, you know, felt it was going to happen personally. But when obviously you're so far down the line with the deal, and you know that the club have agreed to, you know, to the price and the structure of the deal, it does get your hopes up a little bit. But like anyone, you know, how many of us have actually seen him in a great deal of detail? Not many. You know, he didn't have a great goal scoring record. I think the thing with players like El Bilal Touré is he's got such a high ceiling, which is, you know, if we would have got him, it would have been probably a year too late in terms of to maximise our profits. However, he still could have gone on to do really, really big things. He's got a great profile for the Premier League. I think ideal for what we were looking for. But, it, you know, it wasn't meant to be, and we've got to move on. We've got to move forward. But were you disappointed, Peter, in terms of obviously all the talk around it, all the positivity about potentially getting this player in? But were you very much sort of, was it a case of you were disappointed not to do it? Or did you fully expect that it wasn't going to go through anyway?
Yeah, disappointed, but not surprised. I think, you know, particularly with the Touré deal, and, you know, as soon as you hear Atalanta are involved, you just got no hope that he'll sign for Everton. You know, particularly after, as you say, what happened in previous windows, and the kind of skeptic in you thinks, well, are we just being used as a you know, another step on the ladder to improve his deal for Atalanta that he's inevitably going to take? And, you know, hopefully Everton have other targets on the shortlist that we can go to next. But it's, I suppose, what's happened in previous windows is, you know, we've had a main target we've gone for, we haven't got them, then we haven't got the next one, then another name's mentioned, then they go somewhere else. And then that's when it kind of starts to dawn on you, yeah, we're not going to get anyone over the line here. So we just need to break that cycle. And, you know, and I don't know how that happens.
I mean, how it happens is Everton sort of get ahead of the game, don't they? But it's at the moment, you know, we are being linked to other strikers. The latest on Coletti and Acho from Leicester, by the way, just seen from BBC Sports, is Everton have got a mild interest, which is a new one. There was, you know, if you got that on your transfer bingo card, then you're doing quite well with that. But there's a mild interest in him. I think that there's an interest there. Obviously, the talk is that we can get him for about £10 million. How much would Leicester want up front is probably the big question. How much can Everton do at the moment without selling again? Obviously, Damari Gray is the most likely to be moved on. We haven't even seen him back at Finch Farm as of yet, as we speak today. So Iheanacho and Che Adams seem to be the two. If we're talking about the famous Premier League experience, They seem to be the two, Phil, that have been linked, not heavily, but have certainly been in the conversation over the last sort of week or so. What's your take on that? Would you be happy with either of them to come in as another striker, another body up front to be able to choose from?
Do you know, I've always rated that in Iheanacho. I really have. At City, when he obviously a bit part player, but he'd still come on and score goals. Obviously, the abundance of talent around him helped that. But obviously, he was a young, bright kid. Then I went to Leicester, and obviously Leicester were doing well. And one of those teams, a bit like Everton of old, like in and around 6th to 8th position. But again, I thought he balanced Vardy quite well, quite intelligent kind of player, left-footed. I think he's only 25, 26, I could be wrong. I think he's around that age bracket. So at 10 million, I would really like Iheanacho. I do think, I know that he had a great season last year, had a few injuries. But every time I've seen him play, he's got a bit of a nasty side to him. He's got goals, he's intelligent, he brings people into play, drops deep, allows runners to go past him. And I always like a left-footed centre-forward. I just do. But I think I prefer him over Shea Adams. Shea Adams is quite a lazy kind of link because it kind of suits our mould, like cheap. He's been relegated, he's a big lad, he doesn't score many goals, he's not prolific. It'll probably be the one we actually get, to be fair. Would it bother me? It would worry me because I don't think his goal record, if even in his good days at Southampton, has been great. They've never been a top side, Southampton like Leicester have been, compared to Iheanacho. But I'm thinking he's similar build to Dominic Calvert-Lewin. He can hold the ball up, he puts his head where it hurts. You know, he's a big, strong lad. He's obviously an international now, playing for Scotland. I'm not sure the fee and what he would be, but obviously Southampton got relegated. Don't know his contract details, but would I be happy with either? Or I would prefer Iheanacho if we got the Iheanacho of previous to last season, and his age and things. Shea Adams, it's kind of like Pete said, you have one target, don't get him, have another target, don't get him, have another target, and then you're just left with Shea Adams. Obviously, I'll give him a chance if he's wearing blue, but I think I wouldn't be. I don't think that he'd win the crowd over, let's say that.
Well, I mean, looking at the, just in a very, very basic comparison of the two, The one to look at for me is minutes per goal in the Premier League. And Shea Adams is 230 minutes per goal, with Iheanacho 123 minutes per goal, which is a decent that's a decent stat, to be fair, in terms of you know, how often he scores. 84 goals in 292 appearances for Iheanacho, and 39 and 166 for Adams. 39 assists also for Iheanacho compared to Adams 15. Obviously, he's played more games in the Premier League, but his minutes per goal ratio is better. You know, it's a difficult one. Out of the two, personally speaking, I think Iheanacho for me would be the better one. He's played, you know, such a high level. Manchester City, of course, Leicester. You know, he's won things across the board, hasn't he? Another player who's used to success. The Shea Adams link has been there for a number of years. I think when he was at Birmingham before he moved to Southampton, we were heavily linked with him then, weren't we? And it didn't happen. It's just an easy link to make with them being relegated as well. And, you know, with him, I'm assuming, being available for transfer, there's a long-standing interest there. Maybe lazy, but like you say, is he almost the sort of the prize you get when you miss out on everybody else?
Do you think, though, Mike, as well, and obviously we just see it as like players and what the teams they've come from or play for, is the brains behind the madness of the fact that Shea Adams wouldn't be going to the African Cup of Nations and Iheanacho would? Obviously, we mentioned off the pot of the players that we've got. Would that go to us thinking? You don't know, do you? Would you prefer Shea Adams because you've got him for the full season? I don't know.
I think that's a concern we were saying, maybe before the start of the show, that the African Cup of Nations, obviously, comes partly through this season. Everton are going to lose players as it is anyway. In the likes of Decore, obviously plays for Mali. You've got Garner Gay. You've got Alex Iwobi as well. So if you're looking then at bringing in any other players now, you know, do you look at it and think, well, you know, we're going to miss them potentially for sort of 3-4, maybe more games than that at a pivotal time of the season? Does that come into your thinking, or do you have to just say, well, who's the best option? in the first sort of 3 or 4 months of the season, Ian Nacho could bag you say 7 or 8 goals. Adams might score 1 or 2. So in that time, you might win your points. So it's a difficult thing, but I do think that it probably should come into the conversation. Maybe not so much between these two players, but I think looking further afield, I do think it's a concern. What do you think, Pete, on that in terms of the African Cup of Nations? Because you mentioned that Ian Acho is another player who would go with Nigeria. Would you sort of look to potentially do deals for players who are not going to be impacted by travelling there and missing some real key games?
If I'm honest, it probably wouldn't be my kind of primary factor in making the decision between those two players. I think we're probably all in agreement that if we had to pick between the two, we would go with Ian Acho because he's a true striker, isn't he? I think Che Adams is the type of player that's, you know, full of endeavour and, you know, seems to rank very highly on, you know, for things like, you know, sprints and duels and, you know, contributions to the team, but not necessarily goals. He's not a finisher, is he? Whereas I think Ian Acho is a rounded, typical, number nine with good technical ability and is, you know, is a proven goal scorer. Yeah, we might lose him if we did sign him for a period of time, but I think you've got to look longer term, haven't you? And the hope might be that Calvert-Lewin may be in a position to have more consistency in the team by then. Hopefully, if we could bring in a striker that's able to not just necessarily be backup for Calvert-Lewin, but even potentially compete with him. Obviously, that would be the dream, wouldn't it? So it might not be top of my list. I'd be surprised if it was top of Sean Dyche's list, if I'm honest. But I wouldn't be surprised if it factors into someone's decision making elsewhere in the club, let's say.
Well, another player talking about obviously the African Cup of Nations impact and obviously the striking position. Another player that we've been heavily linked to in recent days, well, probably the last week or so, to be honest with you, is a player. Now, we've been trying to get this name right before the start of the show, so I've been practicing this. So it's Boulay Dia, and he plays for Salernitana in Italy. I think I've got that right. And I'm only going to say it once in case I don't get it right again. So he has been linked quite heavily, and he's also been linked because they've shown an interest in Neil Mopey since January as well. So the thinking behind that is maybe we can include him in some kind of transfer package. I think a couple of days ago, it was talk of a €60 million deal was rejected. Everton then went back and offered €18 million plus Neil Mopey into the deal. Whether that's a permanent deal or a loan, we don't know. Whether it's true or not, we don't know. But that's just been the talk, hasn't it? Now, a player, 26 years of age, Senegalese international, so obviously could be impacted again by going away to the African Cup of Nations. Stats last season were very impressive in, you know, for his side. That certainly weren't fighting at the top end of the table. 33 games, 16 goals in Serie A. It is a very, very good return with 6 assists as well. Phil, is that the kind of deal that you'd like to see us get done? Now, bear in mind, as we said, you know, earlier on in this half, a lot of European clubs who aren't at the higher end of their respective divisions, they are quite happy to take a lower initial down payment. That deal seems to make sense, doesn't it, in terms of, you know, he's obviously a goal scorer. He's got good stats in his side, potentially on par with Everton, to be fair. And he seems to have the attributes that we're looking for in a striker. How good would it be to see that kind of deal go through and get him over the line? We are quite heavily linked, and for me, that's quite an exciting deal for me. That.
No, I agree. What before the pod when you said about the stats, I was quite amazed really, because obviously you're struggling side to get 16 goals and 6 assists, I think you said. That's some return that for a team who obviously aren't a great side or a struggling side. So obviously it's a similar mold to what Everton have been the last 2 years. like you said, the down payments would be ideal for us, and obviously we can include a player obviously going the other way to obviously sweeten the deal. That could be a real gem, that really. Obviously no one's come across in the league. Because then potentially you could obviously, we've got two other loans we've got. We could maybe loan one of the strikers that we've mentioned. You don't know how that could forte or see out. But no, that sounds a really interesting. It seems more positive and more on the edge of my seat listening to that than obviously Torre that's gone to Atalanta personally, just because in a struggling side and it fits the mould of Everton and the down payment situation. No, when I heard it this week, it was quite, and obviously hearing the stats this morning, that's quite made me on the edge of the seat, really.
It's how I built him up, that Phil, that got you on the edge of the seat. He's really absolutely terrible. And he won't offer us anything at all. All jokes aside, he does seem to fit the bill, and it'd be good to see us potentially get that deal done. I'd certainly prefer going out and getting that deal done ahead of Che Adams, most definitely. To be fair to Iheanacho, I like Iheanacho, and if you're looking for someone with Premier League experience who knows where the goal is, he's not a bad option at all, to be perfectly honest with you. I'd even take Jamie Vardy, to be honest, as well. He'd do a job for a year, wouldn't he? And I think they're going to want a small down payment or a small amount of money full stop for Jamie Vardy, but then the concerns around him are the wages side of things, I think, are quite big amongst other things. So it's gonna run over the next probably couple of weeks or so. We've got to hope, haven't we, Pete, that we get a deal over the line before this Fulham game, because if we go into Fulham and we assume Dan Juma will probably start up top. Dominic Calvert-Lewin, we hope, fingers crossed, get some game time against Sport and Lisbon next week, which then means that if we need to try and change things up, it's a much more positive situation to bring on Dominic Calvert-Lewin off the bench than it would be to bring off the bench a Neil Mope type figure. But we've got to try and get a deal done, haven't we, for the right strike. If there's someone who can come in, hit the ground running, get us some important goals early on, to get that player done before Fulham would give us all, I think, a real boost, wouldn't it?
Definitely, mate. So I look forward to seeing this dire start up front for Nottingham Forest next season. but look, wouldn't it be great if we signed someone that was let's say a gamble or an unknown based on a scouting profile? How refreshing would it be for us to have a podcast saying, look, how's it worked out for this signing made off the back of our scouts or the new direction the club are going in, rather than how's this stupid decision being made, or people within the club seem to be across purposes. It would be great to go in to that Fulham game not just with additional recruitment, but additional recruitment that comes from more of a stable base. But I completely agree with you. Like we said earlier, it would be really unfortunate, I think, all round, if we're putting Dan Juma in the position of having to play his first game for Everton in a position that isn't his natural position, that doesn't play to his strengths, where likely he's going to have some teething problems and he's going to fall into patterns of play that are more in line with the positions that he favours and he's used to playing, because it will just probably be a frustrating experience all round, and we're not going to get the best version of Everton or the best version of Dan Juma and all of that stuff. It just filters throughout the squad, throughout the stadium, throughout the fan base. So it would be great to go into Fulham with the team that likely we're going to have for the rest of the season. And with a central striker who is going to fulfil that role. But I'm not hopeful, and I hope I'm wrong.
Well, I hope when we're speaking next weekend after the Sport and Lisbon game, we've been pleasantly surprised in the next week or so, because we are back to Goodison Park next week, and obviously it's always exciting to get back in to our home, of course, and with what could be the last full season at Goodison Park. So it's promising to be potentially an emotional time. I hope it's a very, very laid back and less exciting less anxiety-inducing season than we've had the last two seasons, that's for sure. Just want a nice little quiet season where we finish about 12th, and I'll be fairly satisfied with that. But obviously, we are back there next weekend. As we know, Phil, we're going to see Joe Hagez probably score a hat-trick, given how heavily linked we were to him. But you're looking forward to getting back into Goodison Park, and obviously, on the eve of the Premier League season almost kicking off again, it's always good. Whatever's happened in the previous season, it's always good. You've got that optimism, haven't you, when you get back into Goodison Park for the season ahead?
Yeah, it's one of my... Do you know what, Mike, Pete? It's one of my favourite games. We always get a European home, you know, before the start of the season. And like you said, even seasons gone by, you still come full of optimism. Like, I still will be. I always am, do you know what I mean? But you see people around you they haven't seen, you know, all summer. You talk and you see the players back again. You see Sean Dyche on the sideline. It's always been a game I really do look forward to be fair. And like you said, it could be potentially the last one, couldn't it? So it'll be an extra special this time.
It certainly will. It certainly will. And when the sirens kick in and Zed Cars obviously follows, it's always a goosebump moment, isn't it? Whatever the occasion. So we look forward to getting back to Goodison Park next weekend. We hope that by that time we've got a striker either through the door or very close to being through the door. We hope to see Dominic Calvert-Lewin, of course, get his first bit of game time of a pre-season as well. But before we finish, just a reminder for those who like to take part in this, Fantasy Football League is out. The Unholy Trinity Podcast Premier, as it's been known for the last couple of years. Lee's taken the last couple of titles, so he needs to be knocked off his perch. Keeps on saying that we owe him a prize because he's won, but we're refusing to pay out, of course. £75 to the winner, not to be sniffed at. So if you want to get involved with that, all the links are on Twitter, on our pinned tweet, and also join link, and there's also a code as well for anybody who does want to join. So if you go to Premier League, you go to PremierLeague.com, go to the sort of fantasy section of the Premier League, and put in the code 3F3UE9. That will then allow you to join our league, all free of charge, of course. And keep your eyes out as well on Twitter for future competitions. We've already done a home share competition. The person picked the goalkeeper share, which is not, it's a classic, by the way. The away share competition, which was drawn on Friday, they picked the away share, so that'll be sent out at the start of this week. And when that third share gets dropped, looks like it's going to be the 86 Denmark style. That's that template, white and grey, we think, but don't quote me on it. That's going to be dropping shortly, hopefully. We'll be doing a competition for that one as well. So keep your eyes peeled for that. Loads of things going on. Premier League season's nearly upon us. Might see you at Goodison Park next weekend for Sport in Lisbon. If not, we'll catch you next week for the end of the pre-season podcast, and also a look ahead to our first Premier League game of the season at home to Fulham. So we will catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three Blues, Three Opinions, One Everton Podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.